Hi guys, last one for the year, and yes, it is outside, it is poolside. I had considered it doing in pool, as a few people had suggested. The mechanics of that, a little bit trickier in terms of actually trying to hold the camera somewhere. It's an iPhone 7, so hopefully if I dropped it in the water, it might actually make for a cool feature, but it should be okay. But the other problem is sun, and you know, look, obviously I'm wearing sunnies. As soon as I take these off, you basically can't see because it's so sunny. As soon as I go in the shade, you can't see my face. So this seemed like a really good idea until I actually came down next to the pool and went, wow, this is why I don't do these outside. Now, it's about low 30s here degrees today, in case you're looking at the environment and thinking this doesn't seem like freezing temperature. That's Celsius for the folks in the States and other places in Fahrenheit, around about 90 degrees. And this is the day before New Year's Eve here locally. We're going to be a bit warmer than that over the next couple of days, but it is a really nice environment to be warm in. I will be not so warm in 2 weeks and 1 day, which is when I head off to Europe again. It's a very different story in London at this time of year, and especially, I believe, in Copenhagen this time of year. I've not been to Copenhagen in the winter, but yeah, that's not going to be like this. Now, be that as it may, enough feeling sorry for how bad my weather's about to be. Few things happened this week. Not a lot on the blogging front. I do want to come back and talk quite a bit about one of the blogs I wrote, though. One of the things I did spend quite a bit of time on was, have I been pwned? And if you've been watching my Twitter feed during the week, you would have noticed that I loaded a lot of data. And I'm just checking my iPad and running through some of the things I loaded. You know, we've got stuff here like, where were we? We had Kim Sufi, VBulletin Forum. This is a hosting provider. OVH, related to Kim Sufi, another hosting provider. Bot of Legends, another game. We had a Chinese one from TripleU9, a Crossfire Russian Gaming Forum. Another one, which Russian, or whose Russian characters I cannot read, but it tends to be written as Parappa. And then also Danny Webb, just yesterday. And first of all, I wanted to explain why you're seeing a sort of a flood of these in one go. Now, this is all data that I've had for a while, but it's a combination of finding time to process it all and actually going through the verification process. So for example, time-wise, I have to go through everyone, make sure that first of all, the data looks legitimate. Second of all, it does actually come from the source. And I've written many times before about how I verify the integrity of breaches. And in some cases as well, it also means reaching out to the site and saying, hey, are you aware of this? So Danny Webb is a good example. Now, I loaded Danny Webb yesterday, but only after I had reached out to Danny of Danny Webb and said, hey, Danny, I've got this data. I have found some references online about you having had a compromise, but can you just let me know if this is legitimate or not? And the reason is very simple. I don't want Danny, and there is a girl called Danny who is the person behind Danny Webb. I don't want Danny to get up one day and to be suddenly surprised that people got notifications from Have I Been Pwned, and I sent about 6,000 notifications when I loaded it, be suddenly surprised, wonder what's going on, and the first she learns of her data floating around is my notification. That's just not a good thing to happen, and presently there are numerous other sites or services that do this. They'll just go, yep, they were compromised, I'll just put it in the list. Without reaching out, without sort of saying, hey, maybe you also want to plug the hole that might have led to this compromise. And I don't think that that is an ethical way of behaving. Now, what this means is I am going to end up with longer lead times for a lot of this stuff. There are multiple other incidents I'm waiting for people to reply to. So there's a few in particular where I've said, look, you've been represented as having been breached. Here you actually appear in some other listings of breach sites. Here's a piece of your data. Is this legitimate or not? And they almost certainly will come back and say, yes, it's legitimate. But at least I'm doing them the courtesy of saying, look, your data is out there. You know, you probably should know about this. I think that's really important. I'm quite happy if it takes me longer to get data into Have I Been Pwned because I've done the due diligence properly. So that's why some of this stuff has taken a while. There's a lot of other stuff out there that I'm still processing along similar lines. Lots of tens of millions of records, possibly hundreds of millions. I haven't even looked into all of them in detail. And this is the thing, because there is such a large flood of data. Now, some of them are easy. So stuff like Dropbox, MySpace, the really, really big stuff that pops up. It's all over the news. Everyone knows about it. Very easy to verify. No dramas. But there is a very, very long tail of this other stuff that takes a lot longer to process. So that's the background, and that's why you've seen what you've seen this week, and that's why you'll see this also come in sort of spurts as I get time to go through and process data. So as have I been pwned. Now the other thing that I wrote about, in fact the only thing I blogged about this week, because I was actually out doing stuff like with my family and having proper holiday time, so I did have a little bit of a slower week. The one I wrote about last night though was related to something I tweeted a couple of weeks ago around speaking. Now, many of you know I do a lot of conference speaking, and that's why I'm heading off to Europe in a couple of weeks. And I have a lot of different experiences with conference organizers. And I had tweeted very sort of nonchalantly a couple of weeks ago about one of the most frustrating things a conference can do to their speakers is to ask them to use their slide template. Now, this got a huge amount of support. It got retweeted hundreds of times very quickly. A lot of people were like, yes, that's so bad. And then they chimed in with all these other things that were really, really annoying as a conference speaker. And that sort of obviously really struck a chord. So I wanted to write this blog post about 10 different things that upset conference speakers. And look, some of them are worse than others, granted, but I wanted to go through and touch on them because whilst I had a huge amount of very positive support for it, there are also a few people that used words along the lines of prima donna. And I want to just clarify why these things are important to conference speakers. And you know, the first one, looking at my list here, was what I just alluded to around slide templates. Now, as a speaker, you try and craft an experience, right? This is not just like black text on white slides. In fact, hopefully it's very little text on any slide. You're trying to create a sense of emotion. You're trying to take people on highs and lows and take them through a journey while you tell a story. And it can really be difficult when a conference comes along and says, okay, but we want to brand every slide, often quite overtly, and we want it to fit to a standard look and feel and theme. And suddenly you end up with an event that's just vanilla, full of these things that look the same with slightly different messaging. And as a conference speaker, it's a bit upsetting because it makes it harder for you to tell your story in the way you want to tell it. And frankly, as an attendee, it's a bit crap when every event you go to or every talk you go to sort of looks the same. It's not a great experience. Now that's really important to me. It's obviously really important to a lot of people. A few people disagreed. I put a tweet out there earlier today, a tweet poll that I'll link to, where I said, look, as an attendee, what would you like? Would you like to see a template or would you like each speaker to tailor it? And when I last checked, it was like 84% of people said, look, I want speakers to tailor it. This is what people going to events want. They don't want to see a standard template. Most of them don't want to. So there was that. And then there was stuff like asking for slides in advance. And this makes it hard as a speaker because you're trying to create often stuff that is very relevant to the current time. And we're working in a tech industry, so stuff changes very quickly. You're also continually refining. Like I keep rehearsing right up until literally hours before I do my talk. And I may actually still be tweaking stuff. So it's very difficult to lock stuff in early. And what tends to happen is when you need to, you go, all right, here it is. But I reserve the right to continue changing it, which then kind of defies the point of locking it early. Now, a few people have said, look, they've been conference organizers and they've had to do this in essence, because they don't trust the speakers not to say something really abusive or not to have a half-assed presentation or something like that. And I think that's a different problem. It really is a different problem when you're going, we've asked people to speak, but we're actually not sure that they're going to be able to do it. So, look, I can see both sides. Certainly my preference is submitting stuff in advance, not good. Asking for slides after the talk. Now, this was interesting, because a lot of people will ask for this very innocently, and I get why they ask for it, and I don't like it. And the reason I don't like it is because when you just have the visuals and you have none of the narrative and none of the body motion and the excitement and the movements and everything else that a speaker has that goes along with it, it's almost like you've just been given the lyrics to a song and you're not hearing the melody, right? Like the whole thing just fundamentally changes. And I've had cases where I have provided slides and people have come back and they haven't been happy with some of them. This is after a talk, which in some cases has been the top rated talk of the show. But people haven't liked it because they see one thing and they take their own interpretation of it without it actually being conveyed by the speaker and put in context. And I can see how that they can actually take it out of context, how they could be offended or how they could think it was irrelevant or incorrect. So what I do now is I say, look, I don't care for any of my talks. You can record and redistribute as much as you like. My issue is not with redistribution. My issue is with making sure stuff is in context. I also was tweeting last night and I linked to a TED talk by Mikko Huppanen, who's a speaker who I greatly admire, fantastic speaker. And I said, watch the talk. It was only about 15 minutes or something. Good talk, obviously. Watch the talk. Now imagine you only had the slides. And the talk would make no sense whatsoever. Yeah, you would not really be able to learn anything from the talk. And in fact, you'd look at it and go, well, this talk was pretty crap. When quite the opposite was true. So just have a think about that also for those of you that are asking for slides. If anything, press the organisation or the conference to give videos, to obviously do videos in the first place. Other things, you know, the stuff like screens that were 4x3, badly prepared rooms. This isn't in anyone's best interest if you go into a room and you don't have the right adapters. Not having an AV person there. I did one talk a couple of years ago where I had no AV person before the talk and like a third of my screen was missing. And I'm running around the conference hall trying to find the AV person so that I can get it working, so I can start on time, so that I can deliver at the right pace, so that the next speaker can come in. All of this stuff is very interdependent. Conference laptops, you know, if a conference says we want you to present your content on our laptop, a lot of speakers get nervous because they have tested everything on their machine. Now that's particularly important when it's demos of, say, if I'm doing anything coding wise, it's just about impossible to use someone else's laptop. But even for presentations, because the number of times I've seen cases where, even for my wife who recently did a talk, she said, when I actually ran it on their machine, the animated GIF didn't work. GIF, images. The animations didn't work. And this is a problem. Now, it makes more sense in events like I did in London a few weeks ago for the Wired security event, where there are 20-minute talks back to back, everyone in the same room. You don't have the ability to sort of switch over speakers in a 10 or 15-minute window as people move between rooms. So granted, it makes more sense in some cases than others, but you just got to be really wary when you're trying to get everyone to align to the one standard set of equipment for very different talks. Now, another one, and this one raised quite a bit of controversy. A lot of people said, number 7, not covering T&E is a massive no-no. Now, just to be clear, T is travel, it's not time. So in this context, it would be like saying, in fact, I gave an example. Someone said to me recently, can you come to Hong Kong and do a talk? Now, Hong Kong, for those of you that aren't aware, is the other side of the world to Australia. Pretty much everything's the other side of the world to Australia. But it is probably about a 10, 11-hour flight from Australia. It is thousands of dollars for a ticket, or certainly at least $1,000 for an economy ticket. It is a few hours offset, so there's jet lag. It is a big investment. And when someone says, can you come to Hong Kong to do a talk? The cost of the travel, the cost of the accommodation, the cost of all the preparation and the time that you actually spend is enormous. Most good conferences will say to people, particularly if they're invited to speak, we'll cover your airfare and we'll cover your accommodation. And that's cool. And 90 something percent of the events I do only do that. They don't pay you anything. It's just like, here you go, we'll cover your costs. When an event is saying, we want you to come, in this case, to Hong Kong and talk, and you've got to buy your own ticket and you've got to buy your own accommodation, you're basically asking me to talk at your event, which you're running commercially in order to make money for people. And part of the way that you make more money for the people that own it is to effectively charge me for the privilege of being there, which sucks. And I suspect this is where a couple of people are going prima donna, but you got to look at it, you know? I mean, I have the option of either doing something productive at home or doing something non-productive and laying in the bloody pool or spending time with my family or going and speaking at one of these events. And it's honestly, it's hard enough many times to justify going, even with travel and expenses covered, when I don't make any money out of the thing. And conferences will trade on the exposure value. So the one in Hong Kong said, 1 year, Bono came. You know, it's like suddenly Bono is like going to keep my wife and children entertained and food on the table, and it just doesn't work that way. There is a degree of exposure, no doubt, and there is different value to that exposure for different events and at different times of your career. But to sort of have this blanket position that you've got to pay for yourself is generally frowned upon. Now, in some industries as well, it's just interesting how different the sort of responses were. Some industries or segments of speaking, if you like, say non-tech, non-developer, they all get paid. Might not be a lot, might be $1,000 or $2,000, and that's not a lot when you're making a 1 week commitment. They get paid something. Other areas, nobody gets paid anything, and they pay their own travel and accommodation. And in some cases, they even have to buy their own conference tickets, which I've got a real issue with. But anyway, the point is that there are these real sort of differences in social norms, for want of a better term. Now, for me, if you're not going to pay travel and accommodation, it's just a really, really hard thing to justify. That said, particularly when I do trips like this Europe one, I will try and do other events while I'm there. So I'm doing things like user groups, where there is no cost whatsoever. It's like, hey, I'm already there, and someone's already paying for my hotel. I'll just turn up and talk. No dramas. Different story when it starts coming out of my pocket. Now, related to that, getting speakers over and putting them in bad hotels. I spoke about that a couple of months ago after an experience in London. I don't really want to dwell on that because it's depressing. And the final things here, one of them, sort of booking my own flights. I don't know if this was the prima donna comment as well, but it gets really tricky when there are travel agents for these events that book your travel. And you get this relationship where it's myself and the conference organizers and the travel agent all talking together about how the flight is organized and who's paying for what and where stuff goes. And as soon as you need to change anything, it's a nightmare. And I just had a couple of cases in the past where I've almost been sort of stuck in Europe because these people can't all get on the same page. So what I do now is I say, look, you're covering travel, that's great. I'm gonna book it and invoice you. And if you really want to, you can give me a cap on the travel or what it would have cost you before, and we'll do that. And frankly, that should make it easier on the conference organizers, should certainly make it more predictable, and it makes my life a lot easier too. And the final point I made on here is that if the event is not sort of a mutually beneficial affair, where the speakers and the conference organizers, and of course the attendees, unless they all feel like they've done well out of this event, for various different metrics, whether that is they've gotten good feedback from the talk, they've got good exposure, they've made good money out of selling tickets, whatever it may be. Unless everyone feels like they've had a good time out of this whole thing, then there's something wrong. And when many of these other things that I talked about earlier on go wrong, you don't get to this mutually satisfactory end result. So that's really important. And for the most part, most of the conferences I go to these days are very good that way. I call out NDC in particular, which is the reason I'm going to London in a couple of weeks' time. They run in London, Oslo, and Sydney each year. I just go to all their events because I know they're going to get all of that right. They look after every speaker fantastically. They look after every attendee fantastically. And guess what? We keep going back. So look, when it works well, you get very, very happy people on all sides of the fence. So that was the conference side of things. I rambled on a little bit there. It was something that did get a lot of reaction, and I did want to sort of put things in context because I don't think any of this is about being, you know, look, I'm not exactly asking for all the brown M&Ms to be removed, right? This is just the fundamental stuff to help me do this, not just once or twice a year, but in many cases, dozens of times a year. All right, so last of that. Final thing is I have Raygun sponsoring my blog again this week. They were sponsoring it last week as well. I mentioned them last week. I've been using Raygun for years, and they're sitting there capturing all my unhandled exceptions for have I been pwned. I go in there and I get a nice sort of triage list of here's all the stuff that went wrong. And to be clear, stuff that went wrong can be everything from, say, a 404 because someone's got a bad link, all the way through to a database timeout or my table storage wasn't responsive when someone hit it. And I get all of this triage, you get all the info about the request. It's all run in their service, so they're logging all of that information. And yes, I'm very, very cautious about the security profile of that because there's good info there. It can be configured to make sure you don't capture anything sensitive as well. So I use that really extensively. I'm really glad to have those guys on board. They'll be back again next week as well too. So big thanks for Raygun for sticking with me over the Christmas holidays. And that is it. So thank you very much for watching this year. Next week, I will be back inside an office. And then obviously shortly after that, I'll be in cold places. So as much as it looks really, really nice here, keep in mind this is a temporary state made possible by going to very, very cold, rainy places, which you'll see very shortly. Thanks very much, everyone. Hope everyone has enjoyed it this year and you have a great New Year's as well. See you guys.